Welcome to Golf Talk. This week we're talking with Steve Pelasek, General Manager of Titleist Golf Clubs, and Stephanie Bazilla, again, Metalwoods Development Manager with Titleist. This week we're talking about the 909 Fairway Woods and Hybrids. I wanted to start with the Fairway Woods. Can you tell us briefly about the 906? You introduced the F2 model, and then a year later, the F4. Was that F4 primarily targeted at the aspiring player because the F2 might have been a little tougher to hit? And what did you learn from that release?
Well, I wouldn't say, Eric, I wouldn't say tougher to hit, but it generally, all these, you know, as we talk about the drivers and the fairways and the hybrids, all this stuff just leads back to an overall flighting story. If we have the luxury of kind of looking back in history maybe a little bit more clearly than some, so maybe that lends some clarity to this, but, you know, prior to 906 F2, we had 904F in play on tour and with the bulk of better players that were, you know, playing Titleist fairways, and just the general feedback was that perhaps it was a little too high launch and a little spinny for some players. And so F2 was basically a counter to that. You know, we had a gap. We had a hole in the line. And, you know, if you listen to your tour reps every week and you listen to your customers every week, you hear those things. And so that was F2 was a response to, you know, to feedback that we needed something that had a little bit more boring trajectory. And then counter to that, once F2 got in play, the feeling was, hey, we need something new that launches the ball a little higher. So there was sort of this cycle, and the gap is really just a function of the R&D group at the time, just getting to all the projects that are on their plate. I wouldn't call that strategic. So it was really just the overall effort and the overall history of it. It's just an intention to make sure that we were offering a range in performance. And again, that's just really the overall theme to this thing is when you call yourself or you want to be the equipment provider to the better player community, you have to listen and you have to recognize that some of them are going to have different needs. You know, the whole fitting thing is such a key to getting all the value out of your equipment that you can. So we tend to offer ranges, and really that's what F2 was, and then F4, and really preceded by 904F, which again now leads us to when the time came to do 909, we just said, hey, can we get off this merry-go-round here and introduce both of these at the same time so that we have a family that can perform for the full range of needs for the better player audience?
Okay, so is it safe to say that the 909 Fairway Woods are an evolutionary step with some subtle tweaks based on what you've learned from 906? And if so, what are those changes and how will they help golfers across the spectrum? If someone has a 906, basically, you know, why should they get a 909?
Let's bring the designer in for that one, Eric.
The 909s were specifically developed to address improved playability and forgiveness relative to the 906 fairways. Our Titleist Metalwoods team gathered consumer and tour feedback to define new shape profiles that inspire more confidence at address while also allowing us as engineers to push that CG back lower and deeper to improve the stability, the launch condition performance, and also allow for greater distance potential. So it is a step forward. I wouldn't call it evolutionary because I think that it's a redesign, and it addresses all the performance characteristic issues that we might have had within 906 series.
The 909 F2 and the F3, Steve, you hinted at this, they seem to be positioned pretty much just as the F2 and F4 were in the 906 line, although backwards numerically. The F2 seems a little more suited for the aspiring golfer who might use the club a little bit more from the fairway and wants a little more help getting the ball airborne. And the F3 seems a little more suited towards the real low end of the handicap range, golfer who uses it from the tee more and generates enough speed to get plenty of distance off the fairway. Is that correct in general, and what other fitting parameters might there be?
In general, what you said is correct. The shallower face 909 F2 has been developed to pair well with the player that fits into the 909 D2 driver, while the deeper face 909 F3 appeals to the 909 D3 user who prefers a flatter, more boring ball flight and trajectory. The main point of differentiation, though, from the 906 line is how much easier to hit both of the 909 fairways are. They're larger in terms of volume and shape and size. They're more stable in terms of our center of gravity positioning. That makes both the F2 and the F3 viable performance options for our entire playing audience.
Yeah, sorry for the reversal on the numbers, though, Eric. We're not sure which one's backwards, but we like this one because it matches the drivers. We think this makes more sense.
We talked about this before. The stock shafts match up quite nicely with the new driver shafts. Again, the same basic models are available. They're also a bi-Titleist shaft. Again, we talked about it before, but if you could summarize the answer as tell us about these stock shafts and what does a bi-titleist shaft mean for the consumer?
Definitely. The bi-titleist version is designed to be true to the aftermarket shaft performance. The main point of difference between the bi-titleist version and the aftermarket counterpart is that we have designed in slightly higher torque into our shafts. We've conducted significant player testing at our Titleist Performance Institute, and we've optimized the torque on the bi-titleist shaft to yield the best feel, most consistent launch conditions, and greatest distance potential across our line when paired with our 909 products.
We really like this process, Eric, and we're kind of in the catbird seat in the sense that we get to review what is available, and we also get to provide some input. You know, we get to provide feedback, let's put it that way. The shaft community, we love the thought of being able to pick what we feel is best, but then also we're very fortunate to have some of the shaft community be, they just let us provide some input to make some slight tweaks and modifications.
All right, moving on to hybrid, tell us a bit about the 909H. What does it offer over the 585?
Well, we look at the 909H as a significant design step forward. We've designed each of the loft models within the 909H individually, but paired them all together as a family. What it gives us is a progression across each and every loft that optimizes our trajectory control, our launch and spin potential, as well as provides improved distance consistency. The center of gravity within these and the offset values in particular are progressive. When you start at the 15 degree, our lowest loft option, we have a slightly larger volume head with a deeper CG and less offset, almost a transition step from the fairway wood. As we move up in loft and we move towards that highest loft option, the 24 degree, we have more offset, a more forward center of gravity, which pairs better towards the iron type profile that it is. What we see with that is that we're able to produce a 15 degree that launches higher with low spin and a 24 degree that keeps the ball flight down and doesn't balloon when a person's trying to control that ball flight into the green.
Again, going back a little into history, the 503H was very much like an iron-like design. The 585 and the 909 take on a little bit more of a wood-like design. Does the 909H accomplish everything the 503H accomplished, the iron-like one, or might we see something a little more iron-like in the future? It sounds like...
Yeah, I'll address that one, Eric. I think Steph kind of addressed the 909 performance spectrum. Maybe just a little history will help. Is interesting, at least in this one. Yeah, I think 503 and 585 and 909, they all speak to the respect that we have for the better player and the degree to which we seek their input in the development process. You know, remember that, you know, 503 was developed in 2003, and you know, which is really toward the front end of the whole hybrid explosion, and that really didn't catch it. The big hybrid sales year in the U.S. was 2005, you know, the second half of 2004. 2005, the emergence of that category is almost equal in size to the fairway category. But at the time, back in 2003, if you're focused like we are on the better player, you know, most better players at that time were inclined to look at a more iron-like profile for a club that, you know, by its very intent was designed to bridge the gap between really your longest iron and your fairway woods. So, you know, we felt like at the time we were doing the appropriate thing for what the better player wanted. And I really think over the last 4 or 5 years, that whole thing has evolved into that better player audience being just recognizing the overall outstanding performance opportunities from, you know, something a little more would like. But I think, as Stephanie addressed, the beauty of 909 is it covers that the whole continuum there from, you know, something that's a little more wood-like in the lower lofts to a little more iron-like in the higher lofts.
How has player adoption on the PGA Tour of the 909H been? Are you seeing players putting lower lofted things in or replacing maybe a 5-wood, going, you know, driver 3-wood hybrid? Or are you seeing a lot more players going a little higher lofted and replacing a 3-iron, you know, 2-iron and a 5-wood are about the same, but maybe a 3 or 4-iron? Where's the sweet spot, or are you seeing a whole range of players?
We're seeing the range, really, and it runs the gamut with our players and specifically with what their performance objectives and goals are. This past week, our tour reps received feedback and performed fittings with the 909H and had several players transition from slightly higher lofted hybrids into slightly lower lofted hybrids. It really is dependent upon the course conditions that you're playing, your objectives when addressing that course, and the ball flight that you're trying to yield and the distances as well. We've seen the 909H, particularly in the lower lofts, take out 3-woods and 5-woods, and then as we step forward into those higher lofted hybrids, we've seen it address and take out of the bag the 3-iron because of the improved consistency and playability that the hybrid offers.
It's a really interesting category, Eric, because it covers such a broad range of performance, and oftentimes you can kind of look at the respective players and their basic launch characteristics and almost predict which way they're going to go. Some players are, with a 5-wood in their hand, they're fearful of the thing ballooning, and so they may use a hybrid instead of a 5-wood to control trajectory almost down. Or on the other end of the spectrum, you get players who maybe need or a little bit launch challenged. Those are the players more likely to replace an iron because a similarly lofted hybrid is going to get you a little bit more launch.
Are you seeing a lot of players with towards the extremes where they'll have 2 fairway woods and no hybrids jump right into irons, or 3 hybrids and no fairway woods, or is it pretty much a mixture of?
Typically, we're still seeing on our tour staff players still carry a 3-wood. A lot of times the 5-wood is replaced by a hybrid, and the 3-iron can be replaced by a hybrid as well. Generally, across our staff, we see 1 to 2 hybrids within their bags and still a 3-wood in play.
Yeah, I think, Eric, the 909H in the hybrid category in general is seen as solution clubs. You know, and generally there is an issue with, again, either in the 5-wood area or the 2-3-iron area. So, yeah, as Steph said, we're usually 1 to 2 per player.
And this question comes from the forum. This person feels like the 585 was a bit harder to hit than the hybrids of some other companies. How is the 909 hybrid going to be easier to hit and perhaps a little more versatile? Kind of a summary of the questions we've already asked, but I'll let you tackle that one straight on.
Definitely. Well, the 909H relative to the 585H, we've taken that CG, we've positioned it lower and deeper. It provides a more stable feedback, gives us more consistency on our ball flight and our trajectory and our distance control. Also, relative to 585Hs, we're seeing 909Hs take out the 585Hs on our tour staff across the board. Also, the competitive hybrids that are in the bags of our tour players right now, we've seen over the past 3 weeks, 6 players transition in the 909Hs. We believe in the performance of the 909H. It's a significant step forward in terms of launch and spin. It's a flatter ball flight that has less spin, more control for the players, and they're seeing greater performance advantages with moving into it.
Well, Eric, we're pretty pumped up about this one.
Well, we'd like to thank Steve Palasek and Stephanie Bazilla for talking with us about the 909 fairway wood and hybrid. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
I mark my Titleist with a black dot over the number 1.
With 2 blue dots.
With a red line through the Titleist.
With a DH over the Titleist.
Just 2 little dots.
I mark my golf ball pretty simply.
It's kind of complicated.
Bowling orange with a striped black line.
Just like this.
2 dots with a black dot over the number.
Out on tour, it's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Welcome back. This afternoon we're joined by Steve Palasek, General Manager of Titleist Golf Clubs, and Bob Vokey, Wedge Guru, Director of Wedge Development for Titleist. We have some questions about, Bob, your new line of spin milled wedges for 2009, the fall of 2008. The new wedge line appears to be one of the most thorough offerings ever available in a spin milled wedge, or really any Titleist wedge line. Lofts range from 48 to 64 degrees, separated in 2-degree gaps, and nearly every loft has 2 or 3 bounce options and 3 finish options. We understand you're kind of calling this your greatest hits line. Tell us a little bit about this explosion of choice.
Well, that's a good one. You know, I guess the easiest way to do it is, I guess I have 12 years of being on the tour with Titleist, and of course, many years before that with other companies. It was sort of like a dream. You know, continuing when I first started doing my Series 200, and then I had a Series 300, 400, I had a bunch of different ideas, you know, and I said, we talked about this a couple of years ago. I said, boy, I'd like to, after we had the spin mill, success of the spin mill, I said, I'd like to come up with a series. Let me take everything that I've learned on tour and try to combine it in one set. And all these combinations of bounce angles, call it loft options, and 2-degree increments that were going by, this is what I found that I've used for all. It all came from the tour. People ask me, hey, Volk, what's your R&D department? I said, I got the best R&D department in the world. It's PGA Tour. So I'm out there. I'm down and dirty with them. I take out my notepad, and I hit watch them hit shots, and I try this, try that, and that's where all these grinds basically and custom have evolved from. It's all the different offerings that I've had on tour. Not all of them. I have many, many more to come yet, but this is just the best of my offerings that I've had out there. And every grind that you see out there, it is in at least one player, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 players' bags out there of different grinds and combinations. It's definitely, I call it one of my dreams, call it my greatest hits. I would probably have to say that. I'm proud of it. But you know what, Eric? I definitely can do better. I always strive to do better.
And Steve, this explosion of choice, did you want to talk about?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting watching Bob, you know, and being able to be in the room when this was all being laid out. And one of the thoughts that occurred to us was, you know, hey, this is an amazing line of wedges, but it also it's big. And we need to be able to give folks, customers, you know, players, some information about how to sort through this to pick the right ones. You know, because wedge fitting, for example, you know, you got to know which gaps you got to fill, loft choices, finish choices, groove choices, since the 200 series is still available, sole configuration choices and the impact of bounce and all that. You know, a skilled player needs to know how to do all that. And we just wanted to make sure that the information was available. And so, you know, happily we've got through, you know, through stuff at point of sale in the shops and online, Vokey.com and Titleist.com. There's some really good information for guys to figure out how to sort through this and pick the right ones for their bag.
Eric, also, I was thinking at that, like on tour, it's like I almost have it a little easier than, say, the average call of one of our Titleist fitting centers or PGA Pro is going to fit the average, I call it, weekend golfer. On tour, they almost tell me what they actually need. And I'm just sort of like a doctor, figure out a little bit with them out there. So my job is a lot easier because they almost know really the type of action that they want to see and they want to hit. Whereas I call it the weekend fitter, we almost have to tell them what they really need,
right?
Assist them in that way.
Right. So we've tried to work hand in hand with, obviously the product is the most important thing, but then also arm the purchaser with good info to pick the right ones.
There's been some confusion. I personally don't understand it. About the grind, some people have confused the finish choices, you know, marked as TC, OC, and BN for Tour Chrome, Oil Can, and Black Nickel on the Titleist site as being custom grinds. The grinds vary throughout the set, and you guys are marketing it as unique grinds for each loft and stuff. So can you set the record straight on what that means?
I guess, Eric, what it is going back to probably part of my first question. All these grinds are for a certain particular type of shot, certain type of shot pattern, certain type of workability, certain type of turf, you know, the old rule of thumb, a little bit more bounce, you know, you're going to need for soft turf, soft sand conditions, you know, and that's where you'll fit in. And also you have the ability to, for very firm sand, firm turf conditions, you want something a little less bounce. So I'm able to fit in there. Plus we have what I used to call it my tweener. That's my mid bounce that a player can use depending on his angle of attack, his technique. He can fit right in and he can go start off and call it mid bounce, and then he can go either way on his conditions, type of parts of place that he may live. Call it, say, United States, call it the Northeast, Northwest, Southwest, all of it. They're all different requirements, different types of turf, made a little Bermuda grind, different types of turf that they need. And I feel with the different types of combinations that I have on there, leading edge treatment, sole treatment, cambers, all these things can, I love it. I mean, I did exactly what I wanted to do.
And most of the time, the grinds, Eric, and just watching Bob, they're just a result of working with a player who, you know, I think they generally categorize a guy into a wedge that says, hey, I'm going to get you a high bounce wedge. And then from that point on, there just comes this customization between Bob and the player. And what seems to have happened, at least from my observer's standpoint, is Bob will make a wedge for a particular player, and then another player will see it.
I agree.
Say, hey, Bob, can you make me one like you made for Tom Pernice?
Tom Pernice happens all the time.
And then the next thing you know, another guy sees it, and then it just out of convenience, what do you call this thing? Bob comes up with some, you know, name for it, which we don't even bother publishing because that would really be too confusing.
Yeah.
All the different unique shapes and on the soles, that's where those come from. And like we said earlier about this being the greatest hits, these are the ones that tend to be the ones most popular in the bags, right?
That's what happens. And, you know, one player will see another player, he'll come in and he'll say, God, I got to have a wedge just like, say Tom Pernice has or Davis has or quarterbacks have. And all of a sudden, then I go from there, Adam Scott, you know, what are they playing? This is the one. I said, well, I did a little grind. Look at that. Can I have one? Next thing you know, I got 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of those in play. And I say to myself, well, each one of those are hand ground. So I said, well, I'm going to make myself a tool. So I go with a tool maker. Boom, we make a tool, an actual tool where I can reproduce the exact grind, call it where I'm more exact, I feel more confident with. As a result, this is what this is. All these, call it grinds, are converted into all numbers that we have there. And these are...
And we were using those, Eric, to fill the tour need. And basically, Bob just said, this is what our line should be, because they've evolved into these are the most popular configurations. So that's how it came about.
If a player is looking for a custom grind, maybe you could say that they shouldn't be. But if they are, if they think they need that, what are their options? What can they do?
Well, I'm looking at it right now. With all the options that we have, the combinations, the bounce combinations, he should be able to fit pretty close to any one of our options that we have. We got a multitude of options that are, you're not going to please everybody. You're going to get the odd person. And same as me on tour. I'm not going to please them all. I'm going to have to take some of these grinds and modify them, because everybody has a different, you know, their ball placement, swing, kick, peak, more upright, more flat. They want a different flight. All these things, you have to work with the players on them, you know. And I think, again, this is going to be important when they're going to our custom fitters, you know, or our, I like to always say, go see your local PGA, Titleist PGA Pro.
Yeah, but these were clearly the most popular models.
No doubt about it.
And so we feel pretty good, Eric, about having most of the options covered.
Okay. Switching gears a little bit, tell us about the black nickel finish. Haven't offered it for a while. Will it wear relatively quickly like the oil can, or is it a little sturdier?
Definitely sturdier. And that's one thing that I found, like a lot of tour players, you know, they like a little darker finish, because, you know, especially with a wedge, you know, because it's got, I call it the pancake look, it's laying, sit down at it. You turn around, you get a certain time of the day, the reflection in the sun, all of a sudden is, whoa. So fellas have went to call it maybe the oil can, or they're liking the black nickel.
While we have you, you've set the record for us straight on this in text. Some people don't believe me still. Does rust increase spin? That's the basic question.
Boy, I can go on and on that one. You know, it's funny. All of my tests and all the players, I think there's a lot of perception out there. And I feel with a lot of tour players, and I do have, believe it or not, I do have a lot of called unplated, rusty-type wedges in tour players' bag. And that all came about when I used to do a lot of custom grinds. I tell a player, look, just try it like this. If you like it, this particular grind or whatever I've done to you, he'll have it in his bag. And I'll say, if you like it, I will make you another one and get it plated. So I do another one, back up for him, plate it for him. All of a sudden, he'd say, doggone, I like it just raw like it is. I like the way it rusts over a little, because then again, reflection. And he said, and I do like the feel. And then it said to spin. Sometimes I think that we start perceive that because being not played it, the club feels a little softer for feel, and it's all about feel for those fellas out there. And so they feel, and indirectly, they almost have a feeling that it's spinning a little bit more, because it may, in a softer feel, may stay in the face a little longer. And I tell them, okay, that's fine with me.
Yeah, we have not been able to quantify
that.
No,
haven't.
But I think it's as much about the look. But,
yeah.
And there is a feel perception.
No doubt about
perception.
It. No doubt about it. Personally, Eric, I like to play the wedge myself. I don't like the rust of the raw, but that's a personal feeling. There's a lot of players out there, too. There's a lot of players. I'll go back to my days of working a lot of players with plating we have on, which I call the Tour Chrome. Some players feel it even feels softer than, say, sometimes an unplated wedge.
So there's really all different
personal preference. There's a big perception out there.
Perception is reality for a lot of people. So
oh, doubt
we'll
about it.
With that, 200 line didn't see any changes this fall. Some people wonder why it's still around. So you could tell us maybe why someone might consider a 200 series wedge over a spin milled wedge.
Oh, and I'm liking right now, and I still have a lot of that guys at the range work with Aaron Hobrouser yesterday and Michael Letzik, and both of them are playing a Series 200, and they basically feel, because they don't require the additional spin that they need. They like to hit the ball, let it see, let it release. They don't need that. I call it the instant check. You know, they really don't need it. So this is why they still like it. Plus, they also like the appearance of the Series 200. It's a little larger, the profile. They get real, real comfy. Again, Monday, I was working out the range with Mike Weir. He's been playing a Series 200, 60-06, and a 254-10 for, I guess it's going on 10 years now. And he said, Bob, and I've shown all our new spin mills, and he basically does not need that additional spin. He said, he likes it, Bob, but I don't need it. And there's a lot of players out there like that, and that's why I definitely still have Series 200 out on tour in play in a lot of players' bag. I'd say it's almost, my spin mill ratio right now is, I'd say, about 50-50 right now on tour. That's surprising.
Another option might be for a lot of players looking to replace a pitching wedge or even a lower lofted like gap wedge or something. They probably might want to go with the 200 line because they don't want all the
No doubt about it. This is what happens.
You know, Eric, I feel compelled to interject a little bit here. You know, for years we didn't spin mill the lower lofted options, you know, the 48, 50, 52 in there. And the reason being was we just felt it was too much spin.
Yes.
This new line is entirely spin milled, but the groove that's spin milled into the lower lofts, the 48, 50, and 52, is a different groove than what is spin milled into the 54s and up. It's essentially we're spin milling a V groove into the gap wedges and the pitching wedges because it's just too much spin. But we really like the spin mill process because it gives you a more precise part.
And you can clear something up for us too quickly. Spin milling refers to the way the grooves are cut, not the micro texture surface on the face, right?
That's another thing a lot of people don't understand. They always look at the groove, spin mill groove. So I think it's a combination of the actual groove plus also the face texturing. What I found out in old cast wedge, I'm not saying our Series 200 is the face is very, I call it little flat spots, you know, very regular. But what happens with the, call it spin mill process, we have a mill that comes in there and it cuts the face perfectly flat. And it's unbelievable how flat it is. And that gives us more, then we put the groove in after. And what that actually does, I call it, it's equal compression load. You're contacting more of the ball, more consistent all the time. Not that our Series 200 is a very irregular face, but actually, this is what we really believed in.
Yeah, so the spin milling is really both. There's a fly cut across the face to make it flat, and then that's a milling process. And then also then the grooves are spin milled. One of the last things it's done.
Something we're going to continue with. Our spin mill is probably our we like it. Every club we put out now in that series, spin mill, they will have a very, 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 very flat face. Be perfectly flat milled, and then whatever type of groove we put in, that'll be the only variance of it.
The new groove rule comes into effect in a little bit. How do you intend to address the new groove rule in the spin milled line of wedges? You just mentioned that you like the process, so is it that you're probably just going to spin mill lighter, smaller grooves, or look to a new way of making wedges?
Yeah, we're gonna spin mill a conforming groove.
Right now, I'm in a process. I must have about 25 different grooves being tested as we speak. We had players hitting them yesterday. We're trying to narrow it down to the best performing groove that we feel the combination of all the input that we're going to receive from all PGA Tour players, plus all our machine testing and all our engineer type guys. We have some real sharp engineers. They talk way above my head. Me, I'm just an old golf club guy. You know, when I talk about an engineer, I said, that's a guy who wears a funny hat and drives a train. But when they ask me if I'm an engineer, I said, no, I'm just a golf guy. You know, and I feel we're going to come out with the best groove that's going to give the best performance. And still, we'll always, Titleist, we always try to conform to the rules of golf.
Yeah, I mean, we've got so many good players, fortunately, playing Bob's wedges that, you know, we feel an absolute obligation to make sure that every one of them has a best-in-class option to play in competition. And we'll have those available before the actual transition date so that folks can get used to them. So, yeah, we're ready to go.
And that's a process you're starting now because it's not something you're putting off. And you'll just make a smaller groove and see how it goes. You're starting that process now.
We've been working on it for over a year. Yeah, we've been working on it for quite some time.
What is your take, Bob, as a whole, and Steve? Will it succeed, the new groove rule, in placing a little more importance on accuracy? Do you foresee more players switching to a ball that spins more, perhaps the Pro V1 over the Pro V1X? What do you see as, do you think it'll be successful?
Well, we certainly think that the new groove, it's going to be very difficult to obtain the same amount of backspin, all of the things being equal, with the new groove configuration versus, you know, the current groove. Obviously, the guys over in R&D and are working hard on figuring out the best way to do that. But, you know, and Bob can elaborate, I think it really, you know, since so many guys don't play the big spin mill groove on tour, this thing's so player dependent.
It is.
A lot of guys don't need that much spin.
So that's the player that's not going to recognize it as much. And I call it your good short game players. You know, I can give you quite a few of them. I don't think it's going to affect them as much as it is going to be, call it the bomber gouger type player. You know, if there's a player who relies on that, may rely on that spin, it's not going to affect them as much as it is.
Technique may change, and we've talked about this. You know, and some of the things you might employ is you're going to have to employ a little bit more release, and you're going to have to play that, and then a steeper angle of descent. is another option.
And also lofts. That's why we have the multitude of lofts, why we went 62-64, because we envisioned the only way you're going to stop a lot of balls in certain shots now, you've got to take it back up in the air. There's one advantage with the spin mill groove, you're allowed to take it in a little lower and get the check, you know, that you need it. But now you got to take it back up in the air, so that's why we give the option of the 62-64.
Yeah. So shot shaping will be an option, playing a little bit of release.
No doubt
about it. Maybe a softer ball for some guys. But that's all going to be the process we're going to discover this year as Bob starts working with guys to fit him into the new stuff.
You're going to see a little difference. The guys who may hit it in a rough and can't gadget it out, they may not be able to go for the pins like they have them in the past. I definitely will see that. They may have to, you know, go for the center degree and things like that, you know. I can see that happening, definitely.
Spins about the same from the fairway, whether you have spin milled or more traditional.
Very, very, very close. Right. Very, not as much drop-off. The tour player won't notice much, but I tell you, the average, maybe the weekend golfer, he might see it a little bit. You know, he may notice a drop off in the fairway because he doesn't have the club head speed and technique that, say, the tour player has. So
some of them.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got three forum questions here to wrap up. One person wonders, there seems to be some tremendous demand, and he's ordered a wedge, and he's waited 4 or 5 weeks for a back order. Are you kind of caught by surprise here? And when should the wait kind of settle down to a, I guess, more reasonable period?
Well,
it's a good problem to have.
I wouldn't say surprise, Eric, because we did plan on the biggest launch in the history of the line, actually by a factor of two. So we record shipments in November. We didn't start shipping till end of November, and then we're already hearing from some folks that, they pretty quickly sold their initial shipment, which is awesome. We are going to be a little lean in January and February because those are typically, you know, pretty, they're among the slower months of the year from a, you know, a purchasing standpoint. So maybe we were a little surprised by how quickly the initial shipments sold through. We weren't surprised that there was high demand because we planned on that, but we've been a little caught off guard. Not caught off guard. We were pleasantly surprised at how quickly guys called and said, hey, I'm out, because we figured the initial shipment would last them, you know, a little while. But all that said, we've got, we're really planning on a big March, April, May. You know, we're loaded for bear there, so we should be in good shape in the spring.
It's a funny, a little sideline on that. Steve may appreciate this. My brother-in-law, it was over for a Thanksgiving dinner. He's a local golf pro. And he said, Bob, he said, I ordered my first 15 wedges. I sold them within a week or so. I ordered more, and I said, I won't be able to get them till March. And I go, wow. You know, because I didn't know anything about it all. So maybe he was trying to figure, if he talked to me, I may be able to do something about it. I said, my hands are tied. Sorry.
One person wonders how different types of grasses, you know, I mean, we know firm and soft conditions, but he wonders how different types of grasses can affect wedge choice. He says, my wedges get stuck in Bermuda grass quite frequently on little chips and stuff. Would more or less bounce make Bermuda grass play more like bent or poa that he plays the majority of the year? I think he's one of those guys that goes south for the winter, probably.
Yeah. Again, a lot of that is technique. And I always found one thing, bounce is your friend, no matter where you look at it. The average player, and I'll go on record as saying, he does not play with enough bounce. Boy, you need bounce is your friend in most all conditions.
Do you see guys changing wedges, Bob, from coast to coast when they work it?
That's the option that we put in there. Mm-hmm. Give the ability, because I know tour players, some of them will carry, they may have three in their bag, but they may carry an extra one from course to course. They'll change. And on tour, what I finally realize, when they turn around and play course like TPC and Augusta, that's when they'll turn around and I'll make maybe a special wedge for them at that particular, for those particular events. But there's, most of the time, they're staying the same, but they may just carry that extra wedge. What's happening now, because sometimes the way the pins are placed, when the fellow knows he's going to short side himself, he'll turn around and he'll take out one of his longer irons, and maybe one of his maybe 5-wood, and he'll throw back in maybe a 62 or 63-degree wedge for that particular course. Definitely. And that's usually by the real, I call it the wedge advocate. I can name a whole bunch of players' names from going years back who are really, really good wedges. You'll see them, they'll turn around and they may carry that extra little wedge to have it in their locker.
And most of those are loft differences, not bounce differences, right?
But no, combination of both, a loft and a bounce. You'll see it sometimes. They'll turn around, high bounce, low bounce, depending on the courses that they're going to play. They'll turn around to me, like, again, working with Mike Weir this week, he's talking about pebble. We're talking about spin, talking about bounce. Well, pebble's a little softer green. Maybe I will not need to spin there, or maybe I will need it. You'll say it'll turn around, and it's not a bad idea to have that extra wedge in your bag depending on the course. And of course, they've got, you know, firm fairways, so if they got firm greens, may need that extra little check. So they may go with the spinner.
And then when you get there, you pick the one you need.
You pick the one you need.
Right.
It happens.
Eric, if I could ask, about the most popular loft is still 60.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
We're seeing some 62 and some 64, but it's still
60.
Yeah, it's not close to the 60.
It's still 60.
Yeah.
Okay, that segues into our last forum question here. In your experience, should the average player even have a 60-degree wedge in the bag, or does it most often cause more harm than good? And then what about a 64? Because, you know, that's the new rage, and yet my personal opinion is, you know, if you're a 12 handicap, you probably don't want to be.
I said many times, and I'll go back, and I said this years ago, I said, nothing good happens to an average weekend golfer. I'm talking the average weekend golfer. You know, his handicap is 15, 20, something like that. Nothing good happens when he puts a 60 gray in his bag. First thing he starts to do, he starts to lay it open a little bit. You know, that's disaster. You're adding more loft and more bounce than you actually need. And he doesn't have the technique. He doesn't have that slow, syrupy swing that allows him to do it the way it's designed to do. You know, to take it up, loop, drop it on the ball like that. Next thing you know, boom, they start blading it. They're blading 60. I agree. I can imagine what they're going to do with a 62, 64. But if, I tell you one thing, when it's rule change and these players, you know, if they turn around and put in their bag and spend a lot of time and work with it, I guarantee you 60, 62, 64 will definitely shave some shots from the game.
One of the nice things about the 64 we noticed was it unto itself puts that extra loft on the club.
No doubt.
So you don't have to
lay it open as much.
Like
no doubt.
That. You don't have to be quite as delicate with the swing.
No doubt. They can do it.
But it's definitely a specialty club.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank Bob Vokey, Director of Wedge Development for Titleist, and Steve Pelasek, again, General Manager for Titleist Golf Clubs, for joining us this week. Thanks for listening to the Golf Talk podcast brought to you by thesandtrap.com.